Hello, welcome to yet another episode of In Defense of Liberation, the show that is working towards and educating about a true people's liberation movement and revolution. Welcome to the show. If this is your first time stopping by, I am your host, Josh. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm very happy to have you with me today. If you would like, at the end of the show, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, ideas, whatever, please feel free to reach out. I'm on Instagram, In Defense of Liberation, and I'm on Twitter, RedStarBitch420. You can also email me, indefenseofliberation@gmail.com. I also have a website, defenseofliberation.wixsite.com/website, which is not very updated, so please let me know what you think should go on there. And if you have any experience with web design, especially using Wix, let me know, or let me know if there's a better site I should be using that is free, because I'm poor. But anyways, lovely to have the opportunity to talk with you folks today. I'm very grateful for having the opportunity yesterday night, finishing a recording with the comrades over at Rookery Press. Check out the Rookery Press and get their most recent publication of the collected works of the Black Liberation Army, which is having its third reprint coming out. Buy that. And also, if you can, please consider donating to the Rookery Press. They're using the money for survival funds for some of the comrades and also people locally. And then also for, obviously, the labor, the transcribing, the translating that's going to come up in other works, and the printing of all the collections which they've put together and plan on doing in the future. So again, shout out the Rookery Press. That episode will be coming out soon. I just gotta edit that. But we know that the morning commute doesn't get an edit, so we're gonna post this right away, because I got a little bit of a conversation I'd like to have, and it's been bugging me. I've not been able to get this episode out. I didn't really do as good of a job planning it today as I would like, so you might not even fucking hear this episode. But today I want to talk about the idea of democracy. So starting out, I want to express that I'm no scholar, no expert, no, you know, formal degreed historian. I enjoy history, I enjoy reading, I enjoy studying, and I also enjoy talking to and learning from other people. So I've been able to come to this place of whatever level of understanding you can call it, where I feel comfortable sharing some of the information I've been able to learn, but there's a lot I still have to learn as well. So we are commonly plagued with this idea, which I think a lot of us here on the show understand, like people who are checking out more socialist, communist, leftist type of stuff, that democracy is kind of like a concept or an ideal which over time has shifted many times over, which has been obscured, mystified, and also used as a tool to control not only the citizenry of a given nation, which calls itself a democracy, but also, as the US and Europe and other nations have tried to do, by colonizing other nations under the name of democracy, freedom, liberty, equality, justice, etc. Early on, the ideas of democracy came from, of course, a lot of the ancient societies, we should spend a majority of our time talking about the indigenous cultures, but I want to start with a couple quotes from the most mainstream, annoying, and boring philosophers that get way too much time: Aristotle, Socrates, and Plato. So Plato said about democracy, "Tyranny naturally arises out of democracy." He also said, "Democracy leads to anarchy, which is mob rule." Socrates said, "If you want to be wrong, then follow the masses." Democracy is an outgrowth of failed oligarchy. And Aristotle said, "Republics decline into democracy, and democracy declines into despotism." So, at the time of the ancient Greeks and Romans, it was a slave society. So, only the politicians, which would have been wealthy landowning men who weren't politicians, and likely, though I can't concretely say, my assumption is that individuals like generals would have played some appendage role, similarly to like a council or what's it called when a presidential administration, cabinet, which probably didn't hold any legitimate power outside of wartime, but would have also likely been the sons of, like, ruling class individuals and families. So, the democracy at this time that they're talking about, or democracy in any concept of their minds, would have only been between these groups of individuals, because the women and children, of course, women were given no rights, the children, no rights. And then the majority of the population who was not wealthy landowning men who were politically or militarily connected, soldiers and then just agricultural workers, etc., they would have also been granted no political power because they wouldn't have even been seen as citizens. They wouldn't have even been seen in some cases as people because a lot of them were enslaved. We should mention now, since we kind of dotted the T's and crossed the I's, as they say, about the ancient societies that are supposedly like the embodiments or the ideals where democracy and equality and freedom and liberty are all discussed and debated. They were fucking slave societies. It was all just a bunch of aristocrats and fucking wealthy landowners and politicians who were sitting in fucking rooms and debating this shit. I don't know why we still talk about this stuff. Oh, I do, because we live in a fucking imperialist empire, and they want us to think that these people were cool. Anyways, so I want to talk about a couple other areas of the world, and then we're going to keep chugging along. The first being Africa. Africa had some of the earliest civilizations to cultivate, like, rule of law. Of course, we can think here of Egypt, but we should also think of, like, Ethiopia. We should think of other African nations throughout the Sahara, who were, and towards the southern Africa as well, who had, to some extent, cultivated collective societies where there were formalized norms, there were religious and cultural practices, there were communal relations, there was labor and wealth to some extent shared commonly, and there was a active democracy that might not have been called that, might not have been described with that language, but where, not always, but in some varying degrees, there was a council-like or community-like participation in things like, you know, judiciary issues. So, like, say a crime is committed against another individual, the individual's family who that crime is committed against might have had some participatory role in the ruling over what to do about this crime. And in other cases, you know, situations like in wartime, it wasn't necessarily so that, like, huge massacres were taking place and incredible amounts of prisoners of war were taken. That just, it was not to the level that Europe was at, even pre-Dark Ages. We should also look to the empires and civilizations in Asia, which I don't know enough about to say really which societies were of a democratic sort, but we can look at the indigenous communities of Asia, right, and see that, as always, human necessity requires that by all means we survive. So it would, as it existed in the Americas as well, be necessary for the early societies, communities, civilizations to some extent share labor, resources, and wealth in common, which eventually, as everywhere else, when society was cleaved into classes and things like private property or ownership of land came to be more established, you would have had families or feudal lords or rolling militia groups, warlords, etc., and aristocrats who would have accumulated wealth, who would have gone on to enslave populations, and who would build up huge empires, which were not democratic by any means. But looking at the character of the Asian civilizations pre-European colonization and post-European colonization, the levels of intentional, you know, for example, famines were more than likely, or I should say, were more likely, again, intentional rather than due to just the pure pattern that majority of human existence or human societies dealt with up until only very recently. And we might, well, right now, billions of people around the world are still dealing with this problem of famine, and will be dealing with it worse come the next few years. We're going to be on that list. We also, of course, have to look at the societies, the nations, the communities which existed all throughout the Americas. Now, again, we do not generalize here. We understand that class society did exist and affect indigenous cultures as well. There were empires that were developed, but there were also, for a very long time and still today, deeply rooted communal societies based on the shared necessity for labor, for wealth or wealth redistribution, and for the shared practice of, for example, caretaking of not only children but also the elderly, of political power, of war, where indigenous peoples would have had, of course, warriors, folks who, for all intents and purposes, were trained up, essentially, whether by themselves, their families, or the community, to play that role. But you would have also had, when conflicts arose, a sizable voluntary portion of the population that participated, but also a sizable portion of the population which could voluntarily say, no, I don't want to participate in this conflict and not have to. Imagine that. So, the last thing I will say is that, especially in the Americas, I know a little bit more than I know about the other more, quote, ancient societies, early civilizations, that the Americas, again, to varying degrees, had nations which had extremely communal and grassroots political power, where the, I don't want to misuse a term, because terms are thrown out like clan, tribe, whatever. Small groups of people, right, who lived in community would have had a larger role in the justice side of communal living. Again, so in an example of murder, shall we say, there were different ways in which that ruling, or there were different rulings which would have been come to, but almost all cases show that the family of the deceased would have played a pretty sizable role in the decision making of how to handle the ruling. And it usually would come down to, rather than a punitive decision, a rehabilitative decision, where that individual might grant gifts to the family, might give themselves as a laborer for a certain amount of time, might dedicate themselves to taking care of the individuals in that family, providing for them, etc. Or who would, you know, essentially say, I don't really want to put it in an idealistic way, but would apologize, would legitimately be sorry and have the mechanisms in place to prove that and not be punished. Though, of course, there were cases where it might have been malicious or where the society might have been different, where a ruling could have been something else. But that's something that, I mean, how often have you ever heard of something like that? Where not only the family of the deceased in a murder case actually gets to play the deciding role, but also where the goal of the ruling is rehabilitation, and where the individual who committed the crime actually has the real opportunities to not only, like, reconcile with the family, but also reconcile with themselves and society. In our country, we just fucking slap them in prison and make them do free labor for us. So that, along with, like, you know, the decision to go to war, the agricultural practices, the upbringing of children, and the caretaking of the elderly, all would have been something that was communally decided upon, shared in common to some extent, and meant to build stronger community ties. Rather than compete with one another, accumulate your own, you know, massive wealth, or take advantage of one another. That is a completely different society than what existed en masse across the majority of indigenous cultures across the world, and still today. So, going into the colonial periods, where a lot of these indigenous cultures and nations would see their democratic communal societies, sometimes called socialistic or communistic, decimated through cannon fire, through occupation, through genocide, through mass enslavement, through religious extremism and propaganda, miseducation, etc. And of course, colonialism. This practice came along with a period in time from, you know, again, from as far back as the ancient Greek societies, all through the different European empires, different Dark Ages, the Plague Period, the Crusades, Spanish Inquisition, all these different time periods came along with these ideals to justify the actions that were being taken by the, you know, colonial enterprises and by the church, by different individuals who made their living by exploiting and killing other people, plain and simply. Because, of course, if that is just seen openly and with no real mythos or kind of like pretty picture painted over it, it's going to be really easy for people all over the world to be like, we don't want this, so revolution time. Which is why so many slaves, formerly enslaved African peoples, so many indigenous cultures and nations around the world would be based in resistance, would fight tooth and nail all the way to the bitter end with sticks in hand or nothing at all, who would drown themselves, who would, you know, have to drown their own children, who would send their children away, who would run away themselves because whatever life or death could bring outside of this enslaved environment could not be worse. So, I mean, imagine that. That's just the bare reality. So, around the world, of course, this resistance needed to be not only fought against, but couldn't spread to Europe, because then the issues that Europe had tried to push out through colonialism, through the Crusades, through land grabs, through religious extremism, through the Spanish Inquisition, to offset their class conflicts, to send some of their poor, some of their religious extremists, some of their, you know, dumped upon and forgotten about masses into nations and continents of the world to make them their problem. So for this resistance to spread back would be a huge problem. It'd be a huge issue. So they, again, had to come up with these ideals, these belief systems, these religions, these values, these morals, these justifications and legitimizations of the reality which they were building. But what's funny about that is, although, you know, a lot of the Enlightenment writers, a lot of the philosophers we commonly cite might have had a line or two, or maybe even an entire book dedicated to this idea of democracy, of liberty, of equality, discussing can men be equal, can human beings be equal? Specifically, can men be equal? Because, of course, they didn't really care about women and people they didn't consider human beings. So can white men be equal? Can white men who are rich and white men who are not rich be equal? These discussions were being ultimately used as a prop to distract whoever was listening or whoever cared. And again, to make a mystery of the reality which was happening right in front of people. Similarly to the idea of like the divine right of kings. I mean, anyone logically today can say, oh, that's ridiculous. But imagine being in a world where that's the accepted norm. That's the belief system. Is your king or queen or ruler, whoever, God fucking chose them. That, like, and for you to question that would have been like, You could have died. You could have died. Many people did. You could have just fucking died for saying that. You could have just been killed. So, yeah. It's a little goofy to think about some of the shit that people believed or some of the, you know, ridiculous hypocrisies. But look at today. Look at what's happening around the world today. And how many fucking people believe that it's a democratic society, that it's for freedom, that it's, you know, for liberty and equality. So, I gotta get my bagel here. Fuck, there's always a line now. Never used to be a line. As I transition here to kind of the next stage of our discussion, just want to bring up some quotes from, again, commonly cited, loved philosophers and founding fathers. So I got four here. So from John Locke, citizens and a so he believed that a citizen's government, which of course would have been comprised of, again, white, landowning, wealthy males, in a monarchy or an oligarchy, should share rule. That's, you know, kind of a concept that John Locke developed as what he thought democracy would be. Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, said, and I'm quoting, "Even under the best government, those entrusted with power have, in time and by slow operations, perverted it into tyranny." And then he also said, quote, "Democracy is 51% of the people taking away the rights of 49%, unquote. And then finally, he says, "Democracy relies on an informed majority." Now, I put that second or that last one in there because that's interesting. Because how informed could the majority be, really, when these people themselves were obscuring the truth? So it's interesting, the slips and the tongue twist that they do to try to, I don't know, sell books or ideas or stay in power. It's also interesting because here we want to ask the question that V.I. Lenin puts in his polemic against Karl Kautsky and the German Social Democratic Party, where he asks, you know, or he says point blankly, a Marxist never forgets to ask, democracy for which class? So if we're saying democracy, you know, as Thomas Jefferson said, it relies on an informed majority, we should ask ourselves, who's the majority and what are they informed on? So we know that democracy is a vague term that is used to represent a lot of different things, but commonly is used as an obfuscation for ruling class societies where a very small minority of wealthy landowning white men own and operate the entire society, the means of production, the media, the education system, the military, etc. And so therefore, in most societies around the world, we still really don't fully consider non-white landowning males fully human beings. In some countries, legitimately not so, legally. So, in my reading of that quote, I'm thinking that's what he means, is like for him and his homies, they gotta stay up to date. Everybody else, though, should read his book, which is confusing and stupid and weird. But also, I don't know, a lot of these philosophers kind of openly talk about the shit that they're doing in some of their books. So it might be worth a read if you're ever bored and interested for whatever reason. George Washington, the king, the man, the myth, the legend, the fucking absolute guy, says, quote, "Democracy substitutes election by the incompetent many by the corrupt few." Hey, there you go. He's not hiding anything. He's not saying anything he doesn't mean. The slave owner that he is, he's 100, as they say. Oh, jeez. Anyways, finally, I want to finish with Someone who, probably, I mean, not as many might know him, but very influential throughout the Enlightenment and colonial times, Thomas Hobbes. So Thomas Hobbes says, quote, "Democracy is no more than the aristocracy of orators. The people are so readily moved by demagogues that control must be exercised by the government over speech and press." So two things. One. Well, three things. One, he's being honest. It's like, democracy as we understand it today is just a bunch of people who get on TV and talk about shit or run their mouth or give speeches when nothing that they say matters, nothing they sign on to, they follow, no laws they abide by, and they themselves ultimately only represent the ruling class and the oligarchy, the wealthy, the aristocracy, the capitalists, the imperialists that pay them to be there. So, yeah, first line, true. The rest of it, the people are so readily moved by demagogues that control must be exercised over the government of speech and press. So, one, yeah, demagogues everywhere. That's what politics is. That's what the ruling class democracy is. It's demagoguery, which is just, it's lies, it's mystification, it's propaganda of a negative sense. Not always, but as we understand it in this light. He's saying that people are so stupid that they just get moved by that shit, which maybe if people are uneducated, they don't understand anything what people are talking about, they have no political power, they have no ability to actually control anything, and they don't really have any history of knowing what any of these, like, systems look like and work like, because they've not been able to administrate them themselves. Yeah, I mean, people might not catch on to everything, but, like, if they're stupid, it's because they've been made stupid, and it's not because they're unintelligent, it's because they're misinformed and uneducated, and in often cases, illiterate, so therefore can't figure these things out themselves in books and studies, etc. They have to hope that someone's going to come along and help them, or that they are able to teach themselves to read. Anyways, the last part. Control must be exercised by the government over speech and press. Two things on that. One, so there you go. There is no freedom of speech and press. Right there, one of the main, like, liberal, democratic, whatever you want to call him, philosophers who's talking about, like, why these things should be established. He's saying right there that there should be no freedom of speech and press, that the government should exercise control over it. And also that, you know, again, the people are so stupid that, like, if they were able to have their own press, if they were able to openly speak about these things, they wouldn't be able to figure it out. Like, that's ridiculous. But, so those are the quotes I have. Just to kind of throw us into this idea of, like, the colonial period and when the formalized ideas of democracy that a lot of our politicians and empires have hearkened back to in Europe and in North America. A lot of these philosophers, the liberals, the thinkers, the ruling class elite of their time, A, understood that democracy was not what it was, like, all chopped up to be. They also hated it, from Aristotle all the way down to Thomas Hobbes. Did not want a democracy because they felt people were too uneducated and that it would lead to mob rule or tyranny or despotism or whatever word they used. They also hated it because, of course, they understood that a true democracy would call into question their role in society, though I didn't necessarily pull any quotes that reflected that. That much might have been just true by understanding their class position. And then finally, I should say that, you know, they understood democracy in a certain context where there was slavery, where women had no rights, where children were forced laborers, where non-landowning white men, the elderly, the disabled, etc., had literally no rights whatsoever, were not considered human beings so much as citizens. So in that sense, they talk about democracy very abstractly. They come up with ideals or morals or values or belief systems to uphold the vague concepts of equality or justice, which they've cultivated in their own, you know, spheres of influence. However, two things. Because we've already talked about democracy quite a bit as an abstract idea, I don't want to hammer away at this too hard, but I do want to say that of course, democracy, again, it's a word. It has multiple different definitions. It's been used in societies such as the ancient slave societies of Greece and Rome and elsewhere, to the chattel slavery societies in Europe, in the North American continent, and throughout all of the colonies which they controlled. It was used and is still used during periods of wartime to convey this notion that somehow, for example, the Iraqi people who saw their entire country destroyed, who saw anywhere between 1 to 3 million people killed or injured, who saw millions more have to flee the country for survival, for careers, for opportunities, who saw all of their technicians, engineers, doctors, nurses, etc., either have to follow suit and seek out opportunities elsewhere, or go without pay, or go poorly paid and therefore have to quit, or get laid off because state didn't want to pay them, or the capitalist enterprises which came in after the wars didn't want to pay them well, or didn't want to hire anyone. I'll give an example that approximately 15,000 Iraqi people were hired in the post-war reconstruction projects. This is in a country of millions. 15,000 were hired. So, freedom, liberty, democracy are words that are used, abstractly defined, and debated, discussed by oftentimes like airheads and idealists or nefarious ruling class individuals in a very abstract and vague way, which allows essentially anything they do to be called a democracy. Because when we go on to talk about the material reality, we have to ask ourselves, are they really lying? Are they really lying? Or are they just telling us that this is what democracy is? That this is the democracy they're willing to give us? Because if we look at it materially, and we understand things like the state, so the government, the apparatus of rule by one class over another, the organized monopoly of violence, the administrative and bureaucratic apparatuses which rule society and represent the ruling class, each part of that state, the parliament, the Congress, the Senate, the House of Lords, the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branches, these were all developed, like, through struggle. It's not like when America came into existence after colonialism, through slavery, through the genocide of indigenous peoples, they were like, hey, you know what? Let's just give you this whole government apparatus. No. Most of this didn't exist. Most of the people who lived in this country, on this land, did not actually have any rights, were not considered human beings. There was no voting. There was no participation. There's no political power that a woman or an indigenous person or a disabled person or, a non-landowning white male could have. There was no participatory role. Wasn't until 1840-something that even non-landowning males could, white males, could vote, which we all know how super important voting is. That was sarcasm. So, the material reality is this, and I kind of understand it as a development and a part of the state of the government of the ruling class apparatus, in the same way that like a standing army or a parliament or a council came to be as well, through struggle. So there was, of course, a certain period of time where the idea of any kind of participation in politics by serfs, by slaves, by non-landowning males by women would have been unheard of. But as things got worse and worse and worse during, like, the, I don't want to put a date to it, but, like, the feudal period, and the early capitalist societies, it was necessary because of how impoverished, how unequal, how destitute the majority of the population was, to do something to convince the people that things were changing, to convince them that they had some kind of role, to convince them that they had any kind of power, and to also confuse them again about these ideas, about these systems, about these structures, and put certain names or definitive qualities, divine rights, over these systems of exploitation and oppression to, again, confuse us. As we all grow up in society, especially those of us who grow up in North America and the United States, who are educated by this terrible education system, I mean, it takes us, many of us never really fully get there to break away from the confusion. That's how good they are at it. So similarly to the way in which that kind of education system would have had to be developed and would have had to be cultivated and consolidated into, like, the power structure, so too would have democracy, or this concept of democracy. And of course, democracy could have never been full democracy as it's, like, idealistically understood as a exchange of, you know, equal rights, equality under law, equitable distribution of resources, etc., as the Black Liberation Army points out in their work on democracy versus kind of communism and socialism, anarchism, etc. But can only be understood as this idea of mob rule or of despotism, because to not only the ruling class but also the oppressed classes, this has never been a thing before. And so we understand that through exploitation and oppression, the education necessary to rule this society, but also the experience or the direct control over the means of production, the segments of society that would have been able to shift into more popular or socialist society, were, again, unheard of. So to not allow the people to start hearing about them and start thinking about them and start talking about them, because you got to figure that a lot of socialistic or communistic ideas had been battled against since the earliest interactions between the colonizers and the indigenous populations, it was necessary to fight against any sort of collectivized ideology. So in order to do so, things like individualism, competition, capitalist accumulation, labor relations and capital, racism, sexism, all of these things were thrown into high gear. And on top of that, of course, also, so was the propaganda about freedom, about justice, about liberty, about democracy. So as to build up a base of class collaborators among the white population and to confuse anyone who didn't want to join hand in hand. But again, this democracy wasn't necessarily just an abstract idea. Like, there was a slave society, there were slave societies which were known as democracies. So to say that democracy was just an abstract idea might not necessarily be true, because if we look at the way the state came to develop itself, it has a democracy for the ruling class. The ruling class has direct participation. They have the truest democracy. Now, it might not be democratic idealistically, because it's really the rule of oligarchs and of money and of war. It is democratic in the sense that every ruling class individual who has control over the means of production, who has military strength, political experience, or some kind of relations to the ruling class, has a real role to play in the governing structures, in the apparatus, in the administration of colonialism, imperialism, capitalism, etc. So, is it they are lying to us and democracy doesn't exist, or democracy as it should exist won't ever exist under a ruling class structure? Or are they being honest with us and saying democracy is equality for the ruling class white males who have control over society to be able to dictate that society and govern it how they please through popular decision making and the apparatuses which they've developed, which they control, which they dictate, which they ultimately always are able to manipulate in their favor? That is the real question. Now, I see democracy kind of in the second light, because it makes more sense to say that the concept of democracy as an ideal is, it's not worth toying with in a popular sense, trying to build up the masses on this idea of democracy as a idealistic concept. What we need to do is we need to develop democracy as a material concept, where we understand that popular power through mass organization, through civil society, through legislative, jurisdictional, and executive power being put in the hands of the actual working oppressed people themselves, that is democracy in a material sense, not an idealistic sense, because it's not equal. That democracy is a tool by which the former ruling class is oppressed. It's not a fully equal society, because the people who used to do the exploiting, the descendants and current slave owners, they do not get a say. They do not get freedom of press. They do not get freedom of speech or freedom of assembly. They do not get to build mass organizations. They do not get to participate in civil society. They're lucky they're not locked up, if not worse, because the reality is this. The society we have today, the reason why you work, the reason why black people are killed in the street, the reason why women are raped, the reason why trans people are having their rights taken away, the reason why democracy as a whole does not exist, is because the ruling class is oppressing us, is because the ruling capitalist class is taking advantage of us, is exploiting us. And so for us to build a society based on their equal participation, for us to build a society on their freedom of speech, is nonsensical. It's similar to how people defend fascists and say, I don't defend what you say, but I defend by death the right for you to say it. That's stupid. Kill all fascists. Fascists deserve the fucking wall. Fascists deserve to be 15 feet below the ground, rotten in goddamn acid and nuclear waste. Because that's the energy we have to have if we want to survive. That's the energy that the Black Liberation Army had. That's the energy that the American Indian Movement to some extent had. That's the energy that the PAIGC had. That's the energy that the July 26th movement and the Cuban revolutionaries had. That's the idea that many around the world have had, to understand that ultimately our end goal is a revolutionary process that gets rid of, from the face of the earth, the former ruling class. So, you tell me, is democracy real? Is democracy a part of the state apparatus of a ruling class structure? Is democracy the equal and liberal and free rule of the ruling class? Or is democracy an ideal, a concept that can never be reached? Or is democracy the actual participation of the masses in the control and administration of society's reproduction and production? You tell me. All power to the people.